Since Lord Krishna spoke about two sadhanas that are very important on the spiritual path, one is karma yoga sadhana and one is jnana yoga sadhana. So what Arjuna wants to know, that supposing if one goes through these two sadhanas successfully, then what is the nature of that person? What is the transformation of that person? Because we want the knowledge, which is information, to cause a transformation in us. And Arjuna uses a technical word, sthita prajna. The word sthita prajna, prajna means knowledge, sthita means one who is very steady with this knowledge. One who has heard this knowledge, absorbed this knowledge, and is living his life through this knowledge. That is called a sthita prajna. That means intellectual knowledge has been converted to emotional strength. I can use this knowledge in my day-to-day life. Arjuna wants to know, this individual, sthita prajna, kim prabhaseta, meaning how does he speak? Kim asita, how does he sit? Kim vrajeta, how does he walk? Meaning, how does such an individual conduct himself when he or she is moving about in society? So this sthita prajna is not one who, having acquired the knowledge, runs away and lives a secluded life. How does he meet all the challenges of life? The various types of people he meets, the various type of situation he encounters, what is the state of his mind? And also, other times when he is not mixing around in society, he is alone by himself, what is the state of his mind? Because many people get disturbed just to sit alone in quietude also, the mind is very disturbed. But a sthita prajna is able to maintain this balance with or without also. So this is Arjuna's question. And from verses 55 up to 72, these 18 verses, Krishna gives the answer, and there are the very profound verses in chapter 2. And Krishna will answer Arjuna's question on two points. One, he will tell what are the marks of a sthita prajna. So why is it important for us to know? That means we can use this as a guideline, whether are we progressing correctly in the right direction, or at least we know what is our goal. So first of all, in verses 55, 56 and 57, Krishna will give the marks of a sthita prajna. What is the nature? Then from 59 onwards till verse 68, he will tell us the two very important sadhanas that we must practice, how to convert this knowledge into sthita prajna. Prajna knowledge, how to convert it to sthita prajna, how to make it firm in us. So there are two sadhanas, he will give us the pointers what we should do. Okay. So first let us look at verse 55, 56 and 57. What is the quality of a sthita prajna? So first thing he says, prajahati yada kaman, the first line you see that. Prajahati yada means when this person, prajahati, renounces what? Sarva all kaman, desires. First thing you read, you want to give up already. You have to renounce all desires. Not one, not two, but all desires. So, we have to understand what do you mean by renounce all desires. And we can only renounce desires when we have a intelligent understanding of what are these desires. So in order to do that, let us look at the nature of the
mind. Because he says here that these desires must be renounced. Prajahati yada kaman, servant kaman, all the desires. How? By manogata, by disciplining the mind. So it is not just physically giving up desires, but how do we discipline the mind to give up desires? So if we look at the nature of the mind and which is in our body, and we must also not forget that there is a thing called Atman, which is this consciousness. And the scriptures tell us the nature of this consciousness is Sat, which means it is something that exists. It is just because you can't see it, just because you can't experience it, doesn't mean it is not there. There are many things in life that we cannot see with our senses. Like what?
Air.
Air. Water. Space. Protons, neutrons, atoms, germs, so many things we can't see with our senses, yet they exist. So, Atman is said to be Sat, means it exists. It is the truth, it exists. Number two, it is Chit. Chit means not only does it exist, but it is a mass of consciousness. That means what? It is the very thing that enlivens the body, it enlivens your mind, it enlivens your whole self. So this is matter. What is it that brings life to it? It is this Atman which has got Chit, which has got consciousness. Without this Atman, the body will not have any life. And the third quality is given as Ananda, which is, it is the very nature of bliss. Okay. But the mind does not recognize this Atman for two reasons. One is due to what we call total ignorance. There are people who totally don't understand or don't want to know about this Atman, because all the time they are seeking pleasures from the world. So the first reason why we do not focus on this Atman is because of ignorance, and this is due to our very tamasic nature of the mind. The tamasic nature keeps us in a state of ignorance. The second reason is we know about this Atman, but there is a lot of doubts. Does this Atman really exist? Because I can't experience it. Is it really there? Although the scriptures tell me, but I can't experience it. So there are doubts also. So this mind, which is either ignorance or doubts, yet the very nature of the mind is it seeks what? Happiness. All of us seek the happiness. So where do you think the mind, which is ignorant or doubt, will seek the happiness? External. So the mind projects externally to look for happiness. This projection of the mind also, in Sanskrit, it's called as it's called projection anyway. It is due to our very rajasic nature. So because of the rajasic nature seeking happiness, it projects outwards, it creates many desires, right? You have simple desires like for ice cream. I want to eat ice cream. That is simple desire. Then you have desire for better car, better house. Maybe you want to go for holiday. There are many, many desires the mind can project. Okay. When we project our happiness outward, what happens? You are searching for the happiness outwards. The more and more you generate desires, the more and more you project that happiness outward, what happens? Okay. So what is happening to you? What is happening? By more and more you keep on...
Further away from...
ignorant.
Move away from sattvic.
Yeah. You create more disturbances in your mind. The more desires you project, the more disturbance you create in your mind. Because until the desire is satisfied, your mind is not at peace. So the more desires you create, unfulfilled desires, because not all desires can be immediately satisfied. You want to go for holiday, you have to save a lot of money. I want to go to Paris, I want to save thousands of dollars. I want a better car, I got to work hard. While I don't have this, the mind is constantly eating away at my desires.
Could that be due to attachment?
Yes, attachment also. Correct.
Attachment to that?
To that particular thing. I must have a better house, I must have a bigger car, I want to go here. All that is attachment. So your mind is seeking outside. What is happening internally? You are creating all these disturbances in your mind. These disturbances in Sanskrit, they are called as vrittis. Nothing but turbulence in your mind. Okay. Now, when you start satisfying your desires, you feel happy. Where is this happiness coming from? You eat an ice cream, you satisfy one desire. Then you went to buy your dream car that you wanted, you satisfied another desire, and you feel happy. Where is the happiness coming from?
From the senses.
Can senses create happiness? Senses are what? Method. Right. Method cannot create happiness. Can ice cream create happiness? It's also matter. Can the car create happiness?
The desire.
No, desire. Satisfying the desire creates the happiness. Where does the happiness come from?
Mind. Is it the mind?
Within us.
No. Is it from
the mind? Yeah.
It is the anandam which you are. Why are you experiencing that anandam? Because by satisfying the desire, you are reducing the vrittis in your mind. When you reduce the vrittis in your mind, that mind, right, automatically this anandam shines forth. It is there, it is within you. When you stop the disturbances of your mind by satisfying some desire, you think the happiness is coming because I had the ice cream, because I bought the car, because I bought the house. But the happiness is not coming from the object. You are experiencing that anandam just by quieting down your mind. So, that's why in Patanjali Yoga Sutras, in the very first verse, he says, he defines yoga, what is yoga, union with God, as chitta vritti nirodha. Now, vritti is what? Just now I said? The disturbances of the mind. Chitta means mind. Vritti means the turbulence of the mind. Nirodha means to quieten the disturbance of the mind. When you are able to quiet the disturbance of the mind, automatically you will feel the anandam. But to an ignorant person, they will continue thinking that the more desires I satisfy, the more I feel at peace. But to a knowledgeable person, a spiritual person who has understood that actually the anandam, okay, how can I prove that the anandam is not coming from the ice cream? Is there a way to prove that the anandam is not coming from the ice cream? Coming from the outside.
It's temporary.
Short. It's not permanent.
If the object can cause anandam in me, it should cause anandam in everybody. Isn't it? If the ice cream can bring me anandam, another person might hate eating ice cream. So how can the ice cream cause anandam? You see? Number one. Number two, and all these objects are nothing but matter. A rock, can it cause you happiness? A tree, can it cause you happiness? It cannot produce happiness. So that happiness, actually what you are experiencing is just by quietening the mind, you are experiencing the ananda. So to a knowledgeable person, a spiritual person who understands this, that means, what is the real happiness? How do I seek the real happiness? By satisfying desires or by quietening the desires?
Quietening
the desires. On the contrary, the least, if I am more content with my life, I am not hankering for so many things, naturally my mind, all the vrittis go off. There are no more disturbances in my mind. That's why they say simple living. Be content with what you have. Don't keep on thinking about all the things that you don't have. The more you project and start thinking about the things that you don't have, the more disturbances you create in your mind. So be content with what you have. What comes, comes. What doesn't come, okay. The vrittis go down. What happens? Immediately the anandam is there. That means what? I can achieve that level of happiness without having anything, despite having anything. It is not having things that make me happy, it is not having things that make me happy. So here, when we come back to this sentence here, we understand how can the sthita prajna give up all desires. It is an intelligent understanding of the world, that the more and more I pursue desires, I am going to create more disturbances in my mind. On the contrary, if I lead a simple life, I don't hanker for things. Whatever comes, I work. It comes, it comes. It doesn't come, it's okay. I don't go and see, not giving up desires, but giving up thoughts of desires. That's most important. Not giving up desires, but giving up thoughts of objects. What happens? You quieten the vrittis and automatically you sense that ananda in between. So, prajahati yada kaman, the one who has given up this pursuit of desires, unnecessary, relentless pursuit of desires. Then, if I give up pursuit of desires, also very dangerous. Why? So, mind has to have something to think about, right? So, what do? While I give up this mundane or worldly desires, I replace them with higher desires, with higher values. I cultivate higher desires. So, what do we mean by higher desires? This is where the scriptures guide us. Have desires. They call it A, B, C of desires. So, what is A, B, C of desires? A is have appropriate desires. Have legitimate good desires. I want to give charity. I want to go to temple. I want to go for Gita classes. Replace those worldly desires. Therefore, keep your mind occupied with appropriate desires, good desires. That is called A, legitimate desires, appropriate desires. Okay. Then, second, B means balance your desires. Have desires for spirituality. At the same time, you can have some desires also to progress in your life. I want to get a degree, I want to get a master's, I want to succeed in my business. You can have those desires, but also balance it with spiritual desires. So lead a balanced life. So A is appropriate, B is balance, and C is clean. Clean meaning what? Meaning have this understanding, if I cannot satisfy the desires, it should not create a disturbance in my mind. If I get it, I thank God. If I don't get it, I also thank God. So don't be affected. Keep your mind under balance. Do not let unsatisfied desires affect you also. So when you have appropriate desires, balanced desires and clean desires, you cultivate those kind of desires. They don't create any disturbances in your mind. Right? So give up the worldly desires and replace with higher, more better value desires. That is what is advised in our scriptures. Don't let the mind just say, you cannot reach a state of desirelessness. It cannot happen because the mind will desire. So project better desires. So here Krishna says the marks of a sthita prajna is one who understands the what we call the
the unnecessary pursuing of all his desires, right? Because knowing that the happiness comes from within, number one. Number two, replace all the base worldly desires with higher desires. What is the state of this mind of the Siddha Prajna? In the third line, Atman Eva Mana Tushta. The mind now, here Atman, the mind is no more dependent on external, because the mind has found the internal happiness. It's well established in the self. So there are two Atmans here. Atman Eva Manaha. Manaha, the mind is established in the self. Which self?
The mind now is established in the Atman, which is the Anandam. It is no more dependent on the outside objects, not dependent on people. It has found the real Anandam within.
So Atman Eva Manaha Tushta. The mind is calm, the mind is peaceful, the mind is at rest, forever at peace. And such a person, Krishna says, Stita Prajna Stado Chate. Uchate means it is said that is what is called a Stita Prajna, who has got a stable mind by intelligent understanding of the world. So that is one quality of a Stita Prajna. What is the second quality of a Stita Prajna here? In verse number 56, he gives the second quality of a Stita Prajna. Yes, sorry?
In the,
yes, sure.
In the 55,
yeah.
English, it says, he's satisfied in the self by the self.
So there are two selves there, right? So the word Atman is used and then Manaha is used.
So you see, you look at the Sanskrit text, Atman Eva Manaha Tushta. So Manaha, which is satisfied in the with the Atman, which is the source of your bliss. So the mind is not searching outwards, it has realized the bliss within. So once you realize that bliss, that means, why is your mind searching outward? Why does the mind search outward? It is only when you feel incomplete that you search outward. When you already feel complete, when you tasted that bliss, there is no more hankering to go outward and look for anything. Right? Our mind only searches outward because we have not found that internal bliss. Once the mind rests in that bliss, it has no more desire for outside things already. By nature. So it is not a forced withdrawal. It is understanding, finding that bliss and being happy in it. Now in verse 56, he gives us some more qualities of the Stita Prajna. So in verse 56 here, he mentions about how a jnani, Stita Prajna, jnani are all one and the same thing, different terms used for the same type of person. So how does a Stita Prajna respond to different situations in life? Understand that the Stita Prajna goes through the same thing that everybody goes through. He or she will meet favorable and unfavorable situations. So what happens to a Stita Prajna? Basically, there are only two. No matter what type of situations you meet in life, you can crystallize it to two. So here, if you see in verse 56, in the first line, he talks about the first type of situation called dukkha, which means unfavorable situation. And in the second line, he talks about sukha, favorable situation. So there are only two type of situations that the mind has to deal with. Whatever experiences you have, either will give you sukha or will give you dukkha. So what about the, first we look at the unfavorable situations, dukheshu. For unfavorable situations, the mind of a Stita Prajna is what? Anudvigna manaha. The manaha is what we say, it is steady, it does not get affected. It faces unfavorable situation, but it is able to withstand all types of unfavorable situation. Now here we are talking about a description of a man who has already absorbed and living the knowledge. So we have not reached that stage.
right? But this is something we have to understand, that that is the nature of a sthita prajna, who is not affected by unfavorable situations. And why is that person not affected by unfavorable situation? Because he has got the shock absorber called, what is the name of a shock absorber? It's called jnanam. He's got knowledge. He's endowed with that knowledge. Our problem is we also have that knowledge. But when does the knowledge come in? Before, during, or after the situation? That is our problem. We have the knowledge, but in that unfavorable situation, we are unable to bring forward that knowledge. And then we think about it later. Why did I say that? Why did I not react that way? Why did I do such a thing? So, to a sthita prajna, the knowledge is right in front. It comes in before. It's not affected by unfavorable situation. That's why I always talk about the FIR. You remember? You remember? The three things how we can judge ourselves. How can we know also that are we progressing spiritually? So day to day we meet so many kinds of situations, favorable and unfavorable. When it comes to unfavorable situation, the first thing you must question yourself, how many times were you disturbed in the day? Frequency, F stands for frequency. Was I troubled twice, thrice, 5 times, 10 times? Did every little thing trouble me? You know, I didn't get coffee at 4 o'clock, did it trouble me? You know, I didn't get my dinner at 8 o'clock, did it trouble me? Every little thing, if it troubles you, that means you have to start wondering, something is not correct. So first of all, we measure the frequency of disturbances. Second is intensity. I stands for intensity. Intensity means something troubles you, but you are able to control it at the mental level. You get a bit disturbed, then you say, okay, now mind, forget about it, you know. Some people cannot control it at the mental level. Then what happens? Then you start shouting. It comes down to your verbal level. You start shouting, you start insulting, you show your anger. So if you are able to control at mental level, it's good. You forget about it. You can't control it, it comes down to your verbal level. And it's even worse if you can't control at your verbal level, it comes down to your physical level. You start throwing things, you start hitting people. So you can see at the different level, intensity, how also it affects people. So F is frequency, I is intensity, and R is recovery. We get disturbed, but how fast do we recover? That is also very important. Are you angry for somebody calls you a donkey? Do you remember it for 5 seconds? Do you remember it for 1 week? Do you remember it for 5 years? So how fast do you recover? And you know the amazing thing about our mind? Somebody calls you a donkey, for 10 years you can remember, right? But last week's Gita lesson forgotten. So look at the mind. What he wants to remember, he can remember. What he wants to forget, also he can forget. So frequency, intensity, recovery, right? So dukeshu anudvikta manaha. That is for unfavorable situation. What about the second line? Sukeshu vigata spraha. The word here, spraha. For favorable situation, what have we got to watch out? What have we got to watch out for? For unfavorable, we can understand. We should not get affected. For favorable situations, vigata, he uses the word vigata spraha, spraha. What should be our attitude to favorable situations?
Also a balanced one. We should overboard.
Correct. So what else should you expect of favorable situation? Or what is it normally we expect when we face a favorable situation?
Don't overindulge. Can we say?
Don't get carried away.
Carried away.
Be humble. What else? What do we normally expect when we have a favorable situation? We experience happiness, but what do we expect? More of it. We want a repeat of it. We want it to last. We want it to experience it again and again. So that expectation is what is going to cause us the problem. I go to a shop today, I enjoy chocolate ice cream. I'm using that example because Swamiji was using that example. So it is sticking in my mind. Yeah, so you enjoy that. And it's good, you enjoy it. It's not that a sthita prajna is not one who doesn't go party, you tell him a joke, he stands there, I'm a sthita prajna, I cannot laugh. No, you go to party, you enjoy, you eat the nice food. But I don't expect the situation to be repeated again and again. I enjoy the moment and then it is out of my mind. So when that expectation is there, the second time it doesn't happen, that's when the disappointment comes in. So I don't have any expectation, I enjoy my life. But if it doesn't happen again, doesn't matter. Right? So here sukeshu vigata spraha. Spraha means our hankering to enjoy that experience again and again and again. That is what is going to disturb us. But a sthita prajna is beyond that. And if you are able to control this response to unfavorable and favorable situations, Krishna says in the third line, vita raga baya krodha. So three things you will enjoy victory over.
Three things you will enjoy with three. That is, first is raga and bhaya and rodha. And vita means you will have victory over these three, what we call our enemies on the spiritual path. So what is actually, in fact, these are all triplets, you know, they all go together. And the source of all these problems is actually nothing but raga, which is attachment. When we free ourselves from attachment, then when we are attached, what is the problem with attachment?
What is the main problem with attachment? See, why do we have attachment? Or what does attachment create? You have attachment to something, be it power, be it position, be it your money. What does it create in you? Along with happiness?
Possessiveness.
A sense of security. Right. So you have this sense of security. I'm sitting in this position of power. I have this money. I am such a person, there is a sense of security. When the attachment brings about this sense of security, that means you are dependent on that for your happiness. So when you depend on this for your security, for your happiness, always at the back of your mind is what? There is fear of losing. So with raga comes bhaya. There is always that fear. How long can I hold on to this position? Will somebody steal my money away? How long will I be famous? All these are there. The insecurity also is behind. It's disturbing you. So with more deeper your attachment, the more there is this sense of insecurity. And when you actually lose it, then krodha comes in. Then anger, agitation, frustration. So the root of both bhaya and krodha is nothing but raga. The more deeper the attachment, the more deeper the insecurity, the fear, the more deeper the, what we call the experience of frustration, anger, when you actually lose it. So, when we are able to overcome these favorable and unfavorable situations with a balanced mind, we are not dependent on external situations for our happiness, then where is there raga, where is there bhaya, where is there krodha? So he says, vita raga bhaya krodha. There is, you are free from attachment, fear and anger. Sthitadir Munni Ruchate. He calls such a person, now also he gives another title, he calls him Muni. Muni, he means one who has a stable mind, one who is not affected, one who is not attached at all. So, Sthitadir Munni Ruchate. And we must be very careful also to understand there's a big difference between attachment and love. This is where everybody gets confused. So you say, I should not be attached to my children. I should not be attached to my spouse. What is the difference between attachment and love? What is the difference between attachment and love? That means when you say sense of possessiveness, what do you want? You want to take. You only want to take, right? You are not interested in giving. You only want to take. And you will give only when that person gives also. So you are not going to give love unless you get the reciprocal love also. That is called attachment. Love is what? Unconditional. I give love. Whether I get love, whether that person responds or not, I am there to give love. So we must be very careful about that. Between attachment and love. We can love our family. But if the child doesn't love us, if the spouse doesn't respond back, our love must not be conditional on that. That is called real love, true love, sacrifice. So there is a difference between attachment. Love is giving and sharing. What I can contribute. Attachment is what can I get from that person. That is attachment. And very important to understand that attachment is born out of a weak mind. When the mind is weak, it is looking to see what I can get out of people. But love is a product of a strong mind. Why again? Because you have found that happiness within. You are not looking outward. So a strong mind will give love. It is a weak mind which is seeing what can I take and take and take. Okay? So here Muni is such a person. Ucchate is called a Muni whose mind is meditative, whose mind is calm, whose mind is introspective, within his control. Okay, verse number 57. Further qualities of a Sthita Prajna. Ya Sarvatra is one who under all circumstances Abhisneha. Again here this word Sneha is a very interesting word. Sneha means, actually another meaning for Sneha is glue, you know, one who stuck to something. Glue, you know, means glue, Sneha. So here means what? A mind which has a tendency to stick on to certain experiences or certain people. So this tendency of the mind to attach itself to everything. Sneha. And normally when the mind demands, does the mind demand always more or less? You always demand more. Mind never demands less. So Sneha is that capacity to keep on demanding more and more from the world. Whatever you get is never enough. So Sneha is that capacity of the mind. That's why a sannyasi, the one who has given up everything, given up means not physically, but we say he has given up mentally. And the scriptures have a saying for this. Asaktaha means detachment. Okay, detachment. Vayuvat charati. Vayuvat means that detachment is compared to vayu is wind, like the wind moving around. See, the wind moves around everywhere, the air moves around everywhere, wind. Does it get attached to something? It never stays in one place, it keeps on moving around. It is never stuck on one thing. Also, when the wind comes to a place, if the place is, whether it is clean or dirty, it does not affect the wind. The wind remains pure. So the state of a mind of a Sthita Prajna is compared to like the wind. Can move around but is never attached to anything. Understands that everything comes, has a time to come, everything has a time to go also. Right? I have no control over anything. Anything can come in my life, anything can go. It is all due to the law of karma. Right? You have no control over the law of karma. So here he talks about one who is unattached, moving about the world but unattached. And therefore, tat prapya subha subham. There are two words here. Shubha means pleasant. Ashubha means unpleasant. Now, the earlier verse he was talking about objects. Here he's talking about people. In your life, you will meet people who praise you, who sing your glories. And you will also meet people in your life who will insult you, who will criticize you. So you meet Shubha means good people, friendly people, people who praise you, and Ashubha means you will meet all kinds of hostile people also. And what is the nature of this person who meets pleasant and unpleasant people? First of all, the sthita prajna is one who does not even crave for any honor. Whether anybody wants to praise him or not praise him, the person is not interested. What am I interested in? I just come and do the work that is required. As long as the work is the right work, I do my contribution. I am not looking for praises. So the person can praise you, the person can glorify you, but it does not affect your state of mind. At the same time, that same person tomorrow may turn around and criticize you also. That criticism is not going to make you stop doing your good work. If you have firm belief that what you are doing is good, you carry on, irregardless of whether people praise or insult you. So what happens here? Na abhinandati. You don't take particular delight in anybody's words. If they praise you, you don't get carried away. At the same time, na dveshti. You don't hate the people who criticize you also. Neither are you particularly fond of people who come and, what they call in Malay, right? What they call that? Hankat, right? Come and praise you. You are not particularly fond of them. At the same time, people who come and criticize you, you don't have any hatred towards them. So that is also the nature of a sthita prajna. Na abhinandati, na dveshti. All punyam and papam you are able to handle, right? Now, just think about it. The external situations are never going to change. The sthita prajna is facing the same world that all of us are facing. Where is the change? Within. Therefore, it requires us to only change our attitude. The situation, the circumstances are going to be the same. The two people who are facing the same situation, the only difference between a sthita prajna and others is the difference in the attitude. When you don't get carried away, when you don't have hatred for that person, that itself brings about our peace of mind. So that peace of mind is within our control. It is our mind. We have to get a control of that mind. So, what is it that makes a person spiritual is your attitude. That is the only difference. Not the external situation, but it is your attitude which will determine whether you are going to progress spiritually or whether you are going to go behind spiritually. So, here Krishna says, such a person who is able to have this control of the mind, tasya prajna pratishtita. Prajna means then this knowledge will get fully absorbed in a person. He is able to live that knowledge in the day-to-day experiences. That information has caused a transformation. So in these three verses now, Krishna has told us about the qualities of a sthita prajna. What is the nature of a sthita prajna? Now the important thing is for us to understand the sadhana. And you see, when we talk about response to the world, we must understand one thing, that the scriptures say one type of reaction is when we face anything from the world, one type of reaction we call it impulsive reaction, isn't it? Somebody calls you a cockroach, you call him a rat. Straight away, you know, you don't think. Calls you a donkey, you call him a monkey, right? There is immediate what we call impulsive reaction without thinking. Now that is also very dangerous because it shows that you don't have a control over your mind. That is called impulsive. Second is what we call meek surrender. The fellow keeps on insulting you. They say, you know, somebody slaps you on the left cheek. What do you do? Offer your right cheek. You don't do that. That is called meekly just giving in. What the person insults you, what the person tells you, he hits you also, you just accept it. You say, no, I'm sthita prajna. Everything I accept. That is not a right way of living also. So, to have an impulsive reaction is bad. To just give in and suffer everything also is wrong. Therefore, what is the right way? What is the right method of living? And normally you see that we swing between both. Either we impulsively react or we give in to everything. Normally we are swinging between these two. So, what is the right way to act? If this is wrong and that is wrong, what is the right way to act?
Give and take.
Give and take.
Give and take.
See, if it is a choiceless situation, supposing it is your boss who is shouting at you, you can't shout back at him because maybe you need the job. So choiceless situation, you have to have some form of what we call control, right? Control. But where there is a choice, then we also have to act, but intelligently. We don't act impulsively. We must have the capacity to know, think, and appropriately act. So if you can't give the appropriate reaction now, at least you should back off, think about the solution, and go back and apply the solution later. But one should never act impulsively, neither should one just give in to whatever is happening. So that is what we call intelligent response. Right? That is a hallmark of a jnani. Okay. Now, we have understood the nature of a sthita prajna. Now from verses 58 to 68, Krishna will talk about the two important sadhanas. As I said, prajna is knowledge. How do I ensure, now I'm sitting in this class, I'm hearing this knowledge, this information. How do I ensure that this knowledge is fully absorbed in me? Because we are just listening, but we must ensure that this knowledge is firmly established in us. So Krishna says two sadhanas are very, very important. And what are the sadhanas he's going to describe? But I'll just briefly tell you the two important sadhanas. One sadhana is called, the first sadhana is called Indriya Nigraha. Indriya Nigraha, you see the word here, Indriya means senses. So first of all the spiritual path when we start, it is very important that we learn to Nigraha means have a mastery over our senses. Why should we have a mastery over senses? What's the reason? Why is it so important to have mastery over the senses?
For discrimination? To differentiate between the right and wrong?
No, just mastery over the senses. Not even to discriminate between what is right and wrong. We are talking at the sense level. Eyes, nose, ears, skin, tongue. Why should we have mastery over the senses? It's a very important sadhana, but we don't think about it carefully.
Senses react to what the thought is.
Senses react to what the
thought is. How we think is how the senses.
Senses are bringing in knowledge from the world outside, isn't it? We experience the world outside through our senses. So why is it important to have sense discipline? Mastery over the senses.
We are not emotionally reactive.
Reacting is a mind level. Now we are talking about senses.
So that we benefit most from the senses.
The senses are the way the world gate crashes into your mind. If your mind is already polluted, and you don't have a mastery over your senses, what will you put into your mind, Samo? More garbage. See the wrong things, hear the wrong things. The more and more you hear gossip, it goes into your mind. You already have a problem with this mind. So if you are not careful about the senses, you will allow a lot of unnecessary things to go and clutter your mind. That's why number one, we need the control of the mind. We have to make sure that we first have control over the senses. So that's why he's going to tell us Indriya Nigraha, very, very important. And the word Indriya in Sanskrit means tentacles. Our senses have a tendency to go outside. What do our eyes like to see?
I don't understand the control of the senses.
Okay.
Because senses are outside.
Correct.
What control can you do outside?
Okay. See, have you seen the picture of the three monkeys? What is it? See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. The more and more supposing I'm watching television, there are a lot of nice programs on television, documentaries, etc. What happens if I subject myself to watching violence every day? I only watch violent programs every day. What happens to your mind? Is it not affected by what you have let through your senses?
Yes.
If I only hear foul words being spoken every day, I mix around with company who only uses foul words, what do you think goes into my mind? So I am polluting my mind. Why? Because I am not careful about my senses. That's why they say, see no evil, hear no evil. We should be very careful where our senses are wandering around. What are they intaking in every day? Am I seeing the right things? Am I hearing the right things? So sense control is very, very important, because everything from that is going into your mind. So the first control is Indriya Nigraha.
So where does the intellect come here?
Okay. Intellect, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. We are only just talking about some form of control over your senses. One should be aware that where am I going? What am I doing? The company I'm mixing with. The words I'm hearing. So that's why we say, why go into satsang? Why do you go and listen to spiritual talks? Why do you mix with like-minded people? You want to make sure that the right thing goes into your mind. Everything that goes into your mind is coming from where? From outside itself. So first control is Indriya Nigraha. This is a discipline we have to start inculcating. Let me give you a simple example. Supposing you are sitting here, you are listening to me. Later he will talk about this, but I will just give you a simple example. Supposing now you are sitting here, you are listening to me with what? What are you using to listen?
Yes.
Yeah, right? Okay. Supposing somebody is cooking some nice dosa idli there, and the smell comes in here. Now what happens? Your nose has picked up the smell, and now where is your mind?
Yes.
It's at the dosa idli, it's no more in Bhagavad Gita, right? So what has led your mind away? Because of your sense. So sense control is very important, number one. Number two, he will also talk about the second control then is Mano Nigraha. Same thing again, mastery over the mind. Because once you have let things come into your mind, even when the object is not in front of you, where is the experience?
In the mind.
Already embedded in the mind. So second thing, I have to also understand how to bring my mind under my own mastery. And we mustn't forget that this mind is a product of all our past lives. And even in this life, we have already done a lot of wrong things, letting a lot of wrong garbage into our mind. So, not only have I got to have sense control to make sure I don't put the wrong things in my mind. Second thing, I must know how to deal with the already what is already in the mind. So, both sense control, Indriya Nigraha, and Mano Nigraha, mind control, is very important on the initial stage of this spiritual path.
Who's controlling the mind? If all the time we are saying it's the mind that is powerful, controlling.
Right.
Now we are saying something is controlling the mind. We have to control the mind. Who is that?
That's what we have to understand. How do we bring the mind under discipline? How do I discipline the mind? How do I discipline the senses? How do I discipline the mind? And you will come across some other words in some texts. Indriya Nigraha is also called as Damaha. You will find these words also. And Mano Nigraha is called Samaha. So in some other texts you will find what it is, one and the same thing. Sense control and mind control. Now, how does Krishna introduce this subject in verse number 58? So here he says, okay, verse number 58, he uses an example of a kurmo. In the second line, you see the word kurmo, which means a tortoise. So first of all, some books say tortoise, some books say turtle. But let us understand what is the difference first between a tortoise and a turtle.
Land and sea.
Huh?
Land and sea.
The tortoise, because of the web of the feet, it is more of a land animal, but it just spend a little bit time in the sea. So majority of the time in land, some of the time in sea. Turtle, the other way around. It spends more time in the sea and some time on the land. So what are we supposed to learn from this? Why does he use, whether you call it a turtle or a tortoise, why give us an example of this? What is the significance of using a tortoise as an example?
Time
Adapts to the situation.
True. First of all, let us look at the life of a tortoise. It is comfortable on land and also in the water. Meaning, this tortoise is like a sthita prajna who is also in the world and also on the spiritual path. He is comfortable in both. It's not that one who has run away, as I said, and lives in a secluded cave. So that's why a tortoise example is used. That tortoise is comfortable in water and on land, a sthita prajna, whether he is in the spiritual path or on the worldly path, both paths he is comfortable with. Okay, that is one reason why we use a tortoise as an example. Secondly, you notice that all or many animals have been given some capacity as a defense mechanism. Some have sharp claws, some have fangs, some can run very fast, so they can run away from their enemies, or either they are able to fight back. But the poor tortoise has nothing. So the only thing God has given to a tortoise to protect himself is what?
Shell.
So now let us look at the tortoise. It says here that the tortoise has got one head, four legs and one tail. And when it senses danger, it withdraws under the protection of the shell. So what does it tell us now?
Five senses.
So the head, no, the four legs and the tail are the five senses. The head is the mind, withdraws under the shell, which is? Suddenly we close everything like that. We cannot close our senses. So what does the shell represent? The intellect. You have to withdraw everything under the protection of the intellect. That means we have to be aware of the dangers, where there are dangers. As I said, the type of company we mix, we got to analyze that. The type of material we are reading, the type of programs we are watching, all kinds of things, where our body is going, we should be very aware. These are all dangers. When we sense, okay, you see a group of people standing there, you know they only like to gossip about things. What do you do?
Avoid
them. So that is what it means. Use your intelligence to withdraw away from that situation where you see a potential threat. And there are some people who, even they know that you're very spiritual, they like to engage you in a lot of arguments, unnecessary. You know, you find those kind of people. You meet them. I don't know whether you meet them. I meet a lot of them. They seem to like to engage you in some kind of argument to prove their point. So, best thing is avoid them. Because it's just a waste of time and effort. They just are interested to argue. Right? So, where you sense these kind of problems, it's better to avoid them. That means the unnecessary, you don't end up causing a fluctuation in your mind. So here he uses example of a turtle. Similarly, we also imagine the picture, the depiction of the three monkeys. See no evil, hear no evil. What they are saying, don't put the wrong things. Don't, if you see evil, better close your eyes. Don't let the wrong thing go into your mind. Right? And so he says, just like a turtle, kurmo angani samharate. Angani means the limbs. It withdraws the limbs. Where? Sarvasa means all the limbs. It just doesn't withdraw the head or the tail. It withdraws everything. That means we should be careful of all kinds of responses. What we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we touch. Everything we should be very alert. Very important to have this. And if you see the another text written by Adi Shankaracharya, he also warns about this. Indriyani Nigra. He uses the word Damaha. In Viveka Chudamani, he says, he gives an example of five different types of animals, he say, that can cause their own destruction because of the weakness of the sense. One example he gives of the firefly. What is a firefly attracted to?
Light.
It rushes towards the light, and what happens? It himself rushes towards the light. It's attracted by the light. What happens to a firefly? It gets destroyed by its own weakness of their one sense. Then he gives another example of a fish. Fish has a weakness of smell. The fisherman drops a hook into the water with the worm. What happens? the fish detects the smell of the worm, goes towards that, bites on the hook and ends up destroying itself. So every animal you look at it, they have some kind of weakness of the sense. And the human being has got how many sense weaknesses? All our senses can lead to our destruction. So any one sense can lead to our destruction. That's why Indriya Nigraha, or known as Damaha by Adi Shankaracharya, he calls it Damaha. He says how important it is to have this control of our senses, discipline of our senses. Where you see possible threat, you better stay away from it. And this we are talking at the very initial level of our spiritual path. If we can't control our senses, there's so much of destruction that can happen. So, Indriyani Indriyateshu, to be very, what we call, alert on all types of objects that can affect your senses or can poison your mind, right? And as we know, the mind has got so much of garbage, so you don't want to keep on putting more garbage into your mind. Tasya prajna pratishtita. That is how also we can ensure that this knowledge also remains firm. Because the same thing, if you are sitting down in the house, now you are sitting here listening to me, as I say, some smell comes, it distracts you. What have you lost? What have you lost? Concentration. Because of concentration, what have you lost? The knowledge. You have lost the knowledge because you are not able to control one sense. Okay, now you go back home. You have written a lot of notes. You have heard a lot of things. Now you are writing, you are going through your notes, you are trying to concentrate. Then also, TV is on. Your ears are distracted. What do you lose again? Again, you lose the knowledge. So in listening also, you lost. In reflecting, reflection also, mananam also, you have lost. That knowledge will never be absorbed in you if you are unable to control your senses. We don't think about it, but this is what is happening. We get distracted here, distracted there by our senses itself. Don't even talk about the mind. That is going to talk about later on. So, that is what he talks about in verse number 58. In verse 59 now, he talks about the second control, which is Mano Nigraha, the mind. And because we know that supposing whatever we move away from any object, once we keep looking at an object, we can stop looking at it, we can move away from it. But unfortunately, since you have already seen it, since you have already heard it, it is already registered in the mind. So, and that's how bad habits are formed, isn't it? We see something, let's say we see a person smoking a cigarette. We see the person smoking, then we walk away. Then what is in our mind? Oh, that fellow looks so calm, relaxed, you know, you're smoking the cigarette. You know, so you start thinking about it, isn't it? And then what happens? You say, never mind, I'll try one time. And you try one time, and you have that experience. And you say, yes, it is nice. And then you try a second time. And then what happens? That habit becomes an addiction already. So we can see, even we move away from it, but the thought is already registered and got registered in our mind. So here he uses the word Vishaya. Vishaya means all the objects of the world, Vinivartante, they are already residing in your mind. All that you have led through already in your past experiences, they have already registered in your mind. And as a result, see what nice words he uses in line number 3, verse 59. Even a person walks away from it, doesn't look at it, but rasa, the taste, varjam, it is already imprinted in your mind. I've seen a nice, again I'll use the same example, sorry, but chocolate ice cream. I walk away from the chocolate ice cream, but my mind is already registered that I want. So you keep on saying, should I have it, should I have it, should I have it, then comes what?
Yes.
I must have it, I must have it, I must have it, then comes what?
I will.
You have had it. Because you will go back and eat that ice cream. And that is a simple example. So rasa varjam, rasa means the taste. The taste is now where it is already embedded in your mind already. Now, what do I do with it? Right? So, and this is the problem. Many people think, I run away, I go to ashram, I sit down, I'm okay. But the problem is you can run away from all the objects. You can never run away from your mind. So the taste is now already in your mind. So now what do I do? I have this craving. I have all kinds of craving. I have desires. I have yearning. And I think you have heard the very, very famous story. I think it's been told many times, but I'll just tell it one more time here, and then we will stop. Of the two monks, you know, they were coming back late from some satsang, and they had to cross a river late in the evening. And it had rained very heavily, so the river was very turbulent. And they met a lady. She was a housewife. She also was caught on this side of the river. She had to cross back to go back to her home, her husband. So one of the monks said, never mind, she was afraid to cross the water. I'll carry you on my back. I'll take you on my back and I will safely take you across the river. So the first monk put her on his back and carried her across, and the second monk just followed. When they reached the other side, the monk put the lady down and she thanked him and she walked away. And the two monks carried on walking. After about half an hour, the second monk got very irritated. He told the first monk, what kind of sannyasi are you? You are a sannyasi or a monk. You are not supposed to even look at the woman, and you nicely touched her and put her. How dare you go and do that? You call yourself a sannyasi. And the first monk said, when I put her down half an hour ago, I already put her down. I forgot about her. Unfortunately, you have been carrying her in your mind for the last half an hour. So who is the real sannyasi now? So we can put down the thing away from our senses, but the rasa vajjam, the taste is there. How do we remove the taste? Here Krishna says that relish, that taste is in the mind. It can only be removed by one way. Param drishtva. When you see the supreme means what? You cannot suppress the thought, and it is dangerous if you express the thought. The only way is to divert the mind to a higher thing, to a higher value. So we must never suppress, we must never express, but you must divert to a, take up a higher thought in your mind. That's why we have mantras, that's why we do prayers, that's why we go to temple, that's why we go to satsang. The reason is to replace the lower thoughts with higher thoughts, purer thoughts. Okay. So here he talks about Indra Nigraha and Mano Nigraha, and he will carry on explaining about this until verse number 68. Okay. So we will come back and discuss this next week. Okay, any questions at this stage? I think we'll switch this off.
Vasudevasutam devam kansa chanuramar